Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 285, February 1st, 2017. Nonpolar capacitors and Randy's transmitter is on the air. Hello, everybody. We're back here in good old Pleasant Hope, Missouri for this show. Then we take off again. We came home from rainy, cold, sleet, hail, Los Angeles. Yes. It was 32 degrees one day. It was like crazy. I don't know what you guys do, Gordo, running around in your shorts like that, but you did. We got a really great show again tonight, and we're going to get into some Audio Alley things. I've had so many questions pending, so I'm going to do that. And I want to know if anybody knows what this is, or if anybody knows what this is, and we're going to get into that for a few minutes. But we got to go find out who all's here. Gordo, did you get into all that cold stuff? What's that?
It was cold here when I left for Quartzsite, and it got colder, so I knew you must have moved into town. So, yep, it was cold. Back to you, Bob.
Oh, it was. George, did you get any of that, or was it warm there?
It was warm here. As a matter of fact, I was trudging around out in the swamp yesterday in my rubber boots again. But it's been warm here.
Well, it was 55 degrees today here in Pleasant Hope, and it's been like that for, oh gosh, almost a week. And I hear it's going to get down to whatever here in a few days. So, but hey, it's one day closer to spring. That's how I look at all this stuff. Well, Gordo's got some really great stuff coming up for his segment and all the pictures of where he's been in the desert. But before we do that, I've got to answer a few questions. And one of the questions, I don't know why, but all of a sudden I'm getting a rash of questions about ICOM and how to hook up dynamic microphones. And so there's a couple of things you have to beware. And you really have to pay attention, because if you don't, as I call it, it's going to become Smoke City. You don't want to do that to your new 7300 or 7851 or whatever, or even the older ones. Since day one, ICOM has always had a situation where they put 8 volts down the mic line. And what that does is it powers the electret condenser element. And then after that's working, that same wire sends it back up the wire into the preamp. So you have DC going down, AC coming back. The problem is you have to block the DC from the AC, or you're going to have big problems. And that's very easily done. I mean, it's simple. And here is how we do it. Let me switch this camera. And the whole thing about the ICOM thing is that it only happens on ICOM. It does not happen on anything else. ICOM is the only one that does this. Not good or bad. It's just the way they do it. And you have to be careful to make sure that you decouple. And you do that with a non-polarized capacitor. We use 1 microfarad at usually 25 volts. It doesn't even have to be that. It's only 8 volts on it. But you've got to keep it small because we want to put it inside the mic connector. But that's how you do it, so that the audio is going to pass right through. It doesn't even know that capacitor's there. But the DC coming down from the transmitter stops right here. But make darn sure that that's a nonpolar. And what do we mean by nonpolar? Another one of those crazy things that they come up with all the time. I always say they do that to confuse us. So here's what we got to do. Here's a capacitor, and you will note on this capacitor, it's marked. There's the minus right there. This is the minus end. This is the plus end. You can't use that in the ICOM. You can, but if you don't have it polarized properly, you could have some problems. Well, you have to have a nonpolar capacitor, and they're very hard to find. So what do you do? How do you make that happen? Well, let me show you a little drawing here. This is very, very simple, and it's something you'll use in all your building days. You'll have a circuit that says, we need nonpolar capacitors. Well, what do you do? How do you get them? Didn't find it at the local Radio Shack or whatever. Well, it's real simple. Here's what you do. You take a polarized capacitor. As I showed you a minute ago, it's going to be marked. It's going to be polarized. And what you do is you take two of them, exactly alike, and you tie the plus ends together. And guess what we have, ladies and gentlemen? When you do that, you have a nonpolar capacitor. And that is exactly what's inside the nonpolarized capacitor box or whatever. So that's how you make a nonpolarized, nonpolar capacitor with a pair of polarized. It's very simple. But boy, does it come in handy. Uh-huh. It really does come in handy. So it's something that you want to put in your old hat. And as I always say, you got to keep all these little tools in the back of your box, and you never know when you're going to use them. But here again, all you got to do is take these two capacitors. These are very big ones. Usually you'll use for the ICOM. We'll only have real small 20 volters. But see, these are polarized that way. So what you do is you turn one of them around, and you do that, and we're there. And, you know, it really doesn't matter whether you tie the plus ends together or the minus ends together. It's still nonpolar, and that's how you do it. And to make a nonpolar capacitor out of a pair of polarized capacitors. I know a lot of people say, oh, that's no big deal. Yeah, it is a big deal. Especially when you see smoke coming out of your transmitter because you put the wrong cap in it. But, you know, you can go out and do this. And this is a new microphone that we've come up with. It's the ICM, but it's black. Isn't it beautiful? That's the ICM. It's very inexpensive. And boy, does it solve the problem. And it comes complete with the cable attached, with the microphone connector. So you can't plug it. Well, you can, but when you plug this into a Kenwood or Yaesu, it don't work because they are not powering up the electric. And the electric has to have at least 4 or 5 volts on it, but works great. And in closing, I want to tell you, I am so excited every day. I'm collecting more and more pieces and parts, stuff like this. And stuff like this. This is a choke. And stuff like this. Because we're getting close. You had to have some of this stuff, which came from an old organ project years ago. I save all this old wire. You can hardly find this stuff. Well, you can, but you got to buy hundreds of feet of it. But here's what we're going to build right here on the O Show. Jerry Ellsworth and I are going to be working on this pretty soon. There it is. This is a QRP. It's about, it's doing somewhere around a watt and a half tubes. AM. Yes, AM. And it's just so much fun. But why I'm so intrigued about this is we're going to be able to go through and you can follow the circuit because it's right in front of you. And you can see, look at the schematic, trace it down, and when it works, and it will work, you're going to be so thrilled with yourself because you built something and made it work. It's so simple. And we're going to do it in steps. We've got to build a power supply first, and then we're going to build the mic preamp on another board. Then we're going to build the transmitter, and we're going to build the final tank circuit. So we could change frequencies of it because we're going to have different tank circuits and all that. I wonder if anybody knows what this is. George, I bet you know what this is, don't you?
I do know what that is.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should say or not, though.
I don't know. We'll just find out. Maybe somebody can tell us in the chat room or email
Bob,
me or whatever.
I've got one of these, and this is what you were talking about just a moment ago. That is a non-polarized capacitor. There's no plus or minus on it.
Wow. That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
So let me ask you, and everybody should know this that has their license because they probably came up on it in their exams, but you showed a 1 microfarad non-polarized capacitor there. If you were going to use two of them, would you still use 1 microfarad capacitors to put those two, you know, positive to positive, or would you go twice, you know, go with 2 microfarad capacitors, two of those, or 2 half microfarads to equal one?
We should all know that because I think it could have been a test. It's a whole thing. When you series capacitors, does it add or does it half? That's the question, right?
Mm-hmm. That's the question.
You think we should answer it or leave it out there for somebody?
I guess we should answer it. Somebody might get anxious and want to actually use it before we tell. So I'll let you tell. I came up with a question you can answer.
It'll work either way at that particular point. It's just the fact that if you use too small of capacitor, you're going to roll off the low end of the audio because the audio has to go through it. There's a reactance through that capacitor of AC. That's the way it works. And so you want to have at least 0.5, 0.75 right in there. Half a mic works fine. You still, for the bandwidth we're doing, it'll work fine. But we ended up with those two capacitors. If they're 1 mic, we end up with a pair of those, we're going to have a half a mic, right?
Yep, right to backwards of resistors.
That's right. And the resistors, wrong side, they add. It's a different deal. Good, George. Thank you very much for bringing that up because it's important. It's very important. And so there you are. Hold up your capacitor again. Hold up your non-polar capacitor. And there's my.
Yep, you got
difference.
It.
Julie,
you can difference. You can find these a lot in companies that sell speaker crossovers and such. You know, they typically use non-polarized capacitors in there. You know, this one's a little big to fit inside a mic connector, but you could probably squeeze it in there if you needed to.
But these are awful big for that. There's my non-polar. I had to make it. But the ones that we use in our microphones, they're very small because they're only 10 volts, and they work fine. But I just thought we'd bring some of that up. Anything else we need to talk about on that, George? I think we covered it pretty good. What do you think?
No, I think that was it.
Yeah. Okay. So we're off and running, and every day I collect more parts, and we'll be starting this project. We're leaving to go to Orlando, so I won't be here for a couple weeks. But when I get back, look out. So there you go. Bordeaux, I understand you're going also to Orlando.
Yes, I will see you in Orlando next week. I get in on Wednesday and help get all the exhibitors zooming around on Thursday, and then the big opening on Friday. So Orlando next week, and Bob, this week in Palm Springs for the Palm Springs Ham Fest on Saturday, we're going to warm it up for you. It should be up maybe 70 degrees. Now look at this. Look at this, Bob. They survive, and they have the built-in capacitor. These are your headsets and your boom mic and so on for the ICOM equipment. This radio right here was so full of dirt, it took a long time to blow it all out. But the ICOM 9100, after a sandstorm in Quartz Fest, after a rainstorm in Quartz Fest where it was pretty wet, the radio worked flawlessly as our special event station. So, Bob, if I may, I'll go ahead and roll what happened at Quartz Fest 2017. This was our 20th year, and it was quite a year because it was one of our largest gatherings. We had over 250 RVers, over 700-plus those that signed in the wet weather and then the windy weather. It was a Quartz Fest of all Quartz Fests. That's Dave, A1AN. Dave and Heather were the leaders of it, and what a terrific job in pulling this 1 week on the desert floor event away. When Quartz Festers came on scene, they were greeted by signs on Bureau of Land Management that said, which way to the Welcome Center? Thanks, Neil, W6FOG, for these great signs. And you look at pretty benign weather at this point. But just as soon as we began to get things setting up, the rain came and the wind came. And over to your right-hand side with the great volunteers is Heather. And Heather, a gem of a great worker, made things happen throughout all of Quartz Fest. So Dave and Heather are Quartz Fest leaders. And they had a welcome area where once the campers and RVers and tent campers and those sleeping in the cars and a couple of folks sleeping on the ground came in and signed in and picked up a lot of literature. They really felt good because they had a little care package waiting for them. Dave, every few hours, was out there updating the events that were going to take place on these big signs that BLM allowed us to put on for our one-week event. And these signs on this side gave us all the Quartz Fest activities. And then on the other side were the locals that put in their special activities as well. This was W7Q, the ICOM IC9100 in position. You see it at the base of that great antenna. This was the cobweb, I believe, from MFJ. It worked flawlessly, and we even tuned it up on 40 meters, although it was 20 meters on up. We squeezed an extra band out of it. And over to the left, you can just sort of see the loop, and the loop antenna from Chameleon was a great performer for our tests. So we were on the air at Quartz Fest 2017, our 20th anniversary. We had AC that Gary provided, and the AC went to those inside tents that needed a little darker environment for the PowerPoint presentations. And you can see them all in the nice tent. And out in the open, there's Tracy. And Tracy, WA6CRA, was the one that came up with a fabulous schedule. And there we're talking about BioInno batteries. And for 2 days, that ICOM 9100 was off of the main power grid fed by big solar panels and working only on a BioInno battery, and it continued to perform. So a great demo. Thanks, Tracy, on the BioInno batteries. And that's Jim in 6J up, off to the left. Jim's the loop guy. Well, we had plenty of loops out there, every RV imaginable, and with 275 ham RVs on scene, we had Bob K6LSL give us some tours of all the different antennas and solar panels galore everywhere. Then a couple of fellas came up going, need any gas? How about several thousand gallons of aviation gas? Well, yeah, that would start our campfire. These were great hams, and they said, here we are. We're here. And they were truckers, 18-wheelers, that were on the road, heard all about Quartz Fest, and wanted to come in and see and take part in all the activity. And one of their buddies in a white truck had more antennas than you could shake a stick at. He knew where every single one went. And, of course, to keep these trucks on the road, you got to have the pets and the XYL. As you can see, they, too, had a great time. So our Quartz Fest really was a great experience for those traveling back and forth on the highway between Phoenix and Los Angeles. Every mode of transportation throughout Quartz Fest was there. Here's HF Mobile as well as VHF and UHF pedal power. Cool, huh? We also had a seminar on all of that. Here I am in Gary's Mobile, and we were constantly going from one generator to the other, from one projection system to the other PA system, and it was wonderful working with Gary because it was fun to make things happen in his little four-wheeler. As you could tell, we were having a good cold time. We had all sorts of great seminars, and this is the one on antenna analyzers. And it was really interesting to see the caliber of personnel that came in with their own analyzers, factored in more info than we ever thought would be coming to the Ham Fest. So Quartz Fest, wow, really brought out the experts. It's Hootenanny time, and that's Russ, 6YAF on the right. And that's Heather, GEM, on the left. And between the two of them, the Hootenanny was a hit. And, of course, there's AC. And if anybody's been to the Southwest, you all know AC. And he is playing his extra special guitar just to keep things fun at Quartz Fest. So not too serious. But I tell you, the Hootenanny that night played for several hours. Even though the wind was sort of beginning to pick up, we had a fabulous time. And out of nowhere come some of the great guitar players, flutists, you name it. It all began to team up as hams do. But other hams were looking at the weather, and we knew on Thursday, this past Thursday, we were in for a blow. 30 to 50 mile per hour winds expected. So that next morning, we get up, we look at the American flag across the way. It is absolutely motionless in its flipping because the wind is blowing so hard it barely is moving back and forth. This is wind about 40 miles an hour. And on the desert floor, you can imagine that ICOM 9100 that you see in the tent was really getting a thrashing, but it survived. So ICOM America, whoever makes the 9100 really has a radio that can withstand the elements. Actually, it held up, the tent did not. But you know, the hams at Quartz Fest, they're tough. They just battened down the hatches. Some of our volunteers were making sure that the welcome tent didn't blow away. And the neat thing about these adverse conditions is the hams just came out of everywhere to lend a hand to make sure that the tent didn't open up 100 miles down in Yuma. Finally, the end of the day, the weather began to abate. And that's DX Engineering. But we saw a lot of neat stuff from DX Engineering. Here is their big HF antenna, and it was standing just as tall after the 45-mile-per-hour winds as it was before. And it is just great to see all these antennas. Now, speaking of Jerry... Jerry Ellsworth, AI6 Tango Kilo, along with Amy, KM6FZE, said at the campfire, we want to try a little whisper. And their whisper setup was a loop compared to buddy poles and with a little brew to keep things warm because it was like 38 degrees and the wind was still howling. Jerry says, we can make contact. And I said, what, with just a few hundred milliwatts? She said, watch. And we did. They lit up the map. And as you can see, it doesn't take much from a loop or a small buddy pole to make contact literally coast to coast. on a band that for boys would have been shut down. So loops were sort of the rage at Quartz Fest. Some of those that we've seen nicely done like this, mechanically and manually swung to a new frequency. This gentleman was able to get his loop automatically to tune to different frequencies. And this is what it looks like after the huge winds came through, but the loop performed very well and found its match. And on the chameleon loop, we would tune it, and it too survived, even though it tipped over. Everything survived just fine. And remember, at Quartz Fest, there is dirt and sand everywhere. You don't need to have a $1 million motorhome or 100 square feet to take part in Quartz Fest. Here's about 12 square feet. And this ham operator said, wait a minute, I didn't show you the kitchen. Wow, look at that. So these little teardrop trailers were just one way that Quartz Festers got together and had fun. The American Radio Relay League allowed Quartz Festers and Quartz Fest to show up on their league page. It's a special event operation. And that's our Dick Norton, 6AA, that came to talk to the folks right at the height of the windstorm, but he packed the fire ring. He had plenty of people there. And other notables from the local area came all the way from the East Coast to Arizona. We had plenty of representation of ARRL officials to learn more about what happened 2 weeks ago at the ARRL meeting of directors and vice directors. So we got the straight scoop. And there's Chris, a past organizer of Quartz Fest. She was all over making friends. And this is next to the last day when we had the big swap meet. And the swap meet was on the last day. And there was plenty of stuff for everyone to look at. So the neat thing about Quartz Fest was everybody just made things happen. That's Neil W6FOG, a Vietnam veteran and an avid ham radio operator, especially on 40 meters. And Neil made it happen. We had Joy there giving the solar weather report. It was truly a team effort of hams, unscripted, making things happen. Where there may have been a gap, he would have filled it in. That's Don Arnold, all the way W6GPS from Chattanooga, Tennessee. He says, I got a radio and I'm going to raffle it off. Well, the grand prize was a Kenwood D74. And there's Steve St. Martin from Lemon Grove, California, a ham that just was drooling over that radio. He was a lucky winner, but not that radio. That's a Kenwood D74. That one's already taken for because they're so backordered on that radio. It's going to be probably 30 days. So, Steve, you'll get it after I see it first. So lots of neat things at Quartz Fest. And, of course, look at this. We had the Quartz Fest Ham Man and Ham Ma'am, and they were both there. These were not the Burning Ham Man. Nope. These will be surviving until the next year. So Quartz Fest, a success, not just for pulling off the event, but for those hams that took part in some strange weather conditions and made things happen. So that's a neat thing about Quartz Fest is it only happens once a year, just like Ham Fest in your area. And you guys and girls get together and make things happen. Let's now go to Newsline and find out what's happening in the world of ham radio Newsline.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2048, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. The Amateur Radio Parity Act is our top story this week. Neil Rapp leads off our team coverage.
Only days after its introduction on Capitol Hill, the bill, also known as H.R. 555, was passed by the House of Representatives on unanimous consent under a suspension of House rules. Under the measure, FCC rules would prohibit deed restrictions by groups, such as homeowners associations, that bar amateur radio communications. ARRL Hudson Division Director Mike Lysenko, N2YBB, said in an email message to members that he was encouraged by the swiftness of the lawmakers' action. action. The measure moves next to the Senate, where its predecessor, H.R. 1301, died last year after overwhelmingly winning approval in the House. Lysenko, who had been involved in the legislative push, urged hams to raise their voices once again for its passage by sending supportive emails to Congress. In an email to members, ARRL President Rick Roderick, K5UR, pressed hams to strengthen the grassroots effort nationally. He wrote in an email message sent to members, quote, "Keep going. Now is the time to charge forward with that same momentum to the Senate. We can do it," end quote. Meanwhile, Missouri lawmakers have been holding hearings on a state version of the Parity Act, as we learn from Amateur Radio Newsline's Christian Kudnick, K0STH.
House Bill 136, also known as the Missouri Amateur Radio Parity Act, was before a committee hearing on Tuesday, January 24, 2017. It was the third hearing scheduled at high noon. Roughly 20 Missouri hams came to the Capitol prepared to speak on behalf of the bill. Due to time constraints, only four licensed amateurs were allowed to testify, one of which was Ward Silver N0AX. Representative Mike Moon from District 157 voiced his basic support of the amateur radio service, but raised his concern about violating private land use agreements. Additional questions about the size of antennas were asked from several district representatives. Larry Scantlin, KE0KZ, is one of the leading advocates of Bill 136. He said, quote, "I believe we could have done a better job at answering the questions about antenna size. I believe that overall the committee received the information they needed to make a favorable decision to pass it out to their committee," unquote. The HOAs were also represented. Jim Durham testified in opposition. However, in the end, he stated that he believed that, quote, "Something positive could be worked out to satisfy everyone," unquote. Next, Bill 136 waits for the committee to bring it up for a vote. In the meantime, organizers encourage amateur radio operators in Missouri to contact their representatives and ask for their support. This information, other ham radio-related resources, and an interactive blog can be found at marpa.us. For Amateur Radio Newsline in Missouri, I'm Christian Kudnick, K0STH.
Back in Washington, D.C., the Federal Amateur Radio Parity Act has already drawn praise from the nation's new top telecommunications regulator, Ajit Pai, shortly after being named new chairman of the FCC by President Donald Trump. Pai, the commission's senior Republican, had only praise for the action taken by the House of Representatives in passing H.R. 555, calling it an important piece of legislation. Originally named to the commission under President Barack Obama, Pai is an advocate of limited government involvement and free market forces.
For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Christian Kudnick, K0STH, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We've had two coronal holes that have been passing through the Earth strike zone, causing some fast wind to give us aurora all over the world. And the sun is even giving us a few little mini eruptions that is adding to the storming. Those stories and more in the news this week. Solar activity is really picking up this week. We just had one coronal hole that passed through the Earth strike zone. The second larger hole is in the Earth strike zone right now, and it's littered with all these bright active regions on the edge of it. And one of them in particular has been firing off these little mini eruptions, and it's adding to the fray, and it's bumped us up to storm levels. We're currently experiencing storm levels now, and this could continue on in potentially through Saturday. Switching to your M-flare threat meter, you can see back on the 25th is when we started seeing a lot of these B-class flares. This is due to those active regions that are around that coronal hole, and they keep firing off these little mini solar storms. And the flaring continued. Actually, on almost the 29th, we actually had a C-class flare. It didn't really erupt anything, but it was a nice little kind of reminder that the sun isn't quite gone to sleep yet. Now, this shouldn't be causing much more than just some noise for you amateur radio operators and GPS operators, but this kind of thing will continue probably through the next 3 or 4 days until these regions rotate out of Earth view. Switching to your solar storm conditions, you can see back on the 26th, we got hit by the fast wind from that first coronal hole. It bumped us up to active levels, but it didn't really last all that long. Then we quieted back down, and then on the 31st, we got hit by the beginnings of that second coronal hole that's now rotated into the Earth strike zone. And along with some little mini eruptions that we've been seeing, it now bumped us up to solar storm levels. So we should be continuing this kind of disturbance probably for the next 2 or 3 days. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are in the middle of this high-speed wind that's coming from this coronal hole that's rotated into the Earth strike zone. At high latitudes, NOAA's anticipating of minor storm conditions with even a possibility of a major storm, and that'll be over the next 3 days. At mid-latitudes, we're only expecting active conditions, and we've already bumped up over that. We've got about a 25% chance of minor storm, but these are conditions that were without these little mini eruptions. So NOAA has kind of anticipated the effects of this particular storm. So most likely things are going to continue to be minor storm level, possibly through the next couple days, even at mid-latitudes. So you amateur radio operators, you're just going to have to deal with it and kind of roll with the punches for the next couple days, maybe even in through the weekend. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, we are still in the green when it comes to M-class flares. We've been popping off a few B-class flares here and there because there's a few active regions that are busy, but they're not going to get us to the M-class flare level. So you amateur radio operators, you might be hearing some noise. You GPS operators may have a few glitches here and there, but it really should be nothing substantial. Outside of that, we do have marginal levels for solar flux, and that's going to continue to stay that way. And in fact, in a couple days, it may even start declining as some of these active regions rotate off of the Earth-facing disk. So we'll just have to continue as we move closer to solar minimum. So the space weather this week has really picked up. We're in the middle of a solar storm due to the fast wind from that coronal hole that's rotated into the Earth strike zone, and aurora is in full force. So you aurora photographers, enjoy the show and snap up as many pics as you can. And as far as you amateur radio operators and you GPS operators are concerned, it's going to be an issue probably for the next couple days at least. And if the sun keeps firing off these mini solar storms, it could even last in through the weekend. So I've seen reports of issues on the 30 meter band and below, especially on the night side, so you're just going to have to deal with it until things begin to quiet down. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Wow, look at Don's flannel. You can tell that he's ready to go out there to Quartz Fest and, like I did, find a piece of quartz crystal right there by where we parked our communications van, just waiting to be added to the ICOM 9100 top. Thanks, Don, for Newsline. Great job. All right, let's take a look and see what Dale is doing. Hi, Dale. How are you?
Hey, Gordo, doing pretty good. Thanks a lot. We've got a couple of things tonight on the video segment. Got an impressive amateur radio public service event in the mountain snow. I bet you'll have to guess what that is. And we've got a look at a no-cost approach to running Windows software on a Mac. And we've got a few pictures from Collinsville's Winterfest, courtesy of Bob. We'll jump right into the videos first, and we've got a firsthand look at the Eagle Cap dog sled race. The video comes to Ham Nation from Josh. He's KG7JK in Enterprise, Oregon. Let's check it out.
This is a field report for the Eagle Cap Extreme Sled Dog Race 2017. It all starts at Race Central, where antennas are erected to serve net control in Joseph, Oregon. Multiple volunteers will man this post 24/7, tracking all the assets involved. The system tracks GPS data both from commercial units and APRS to render a real-time map of asset locations. This is projected on the wall and available on the website with live audio. Volunteers dedicate their time and equipment to run checkpoints in the backcountry for safety. With classes ranging from the 22-mile junior race to the 200-mile Iditarod qualifier, there's something for everyone. Mushers start and finish at the Ferguson Ridge ski area, where the communications team passed traffic for officials and the teams. The special event station, W7ECX, completed over 50 QSOs on single sideband on a variety of bands. Custom cards will be mailed out soon. Now let's check in with the Salt Creek Summit checkpoint.
Here we are at Salt Creek Summit, set up and ready for the race to start in about 40, about an hour and 45 minutes till race start. And it snowed about 5 inches in the last 12 hours, but we got some nice groom trail. Radios are working, obviously. We got the generators running, some traffic. Now all we need is some mushers.
Myself and N7ZEN are out at Fergie, looking to connect with the spots here, and we'll get the trackers on shortly.
Arrived at 1325. That's 1325 with 12 dogs.
I copy VIN number 10, arrived at 1325 with 12 dogs.
Good copy, K7TAY.
K7YPN.
In addition to the typical UHF VHF radios, this year a generous volunteer brought a weather station, IP camera, motion detector, and HF packet setup. At Salt Creek, we pass musher status to net control while we monitor and interface with the search and rescue team stationed nearby, listening also for any weak snowmobile teams trying to get through. There's a simplex repeater there, and staff may need to relay messages if problems occur. Life at the checkpoint can keep you busy. Tending the fire, checking generators, etc. Then there's the challenge of timing and predicting the mushing teams as they head out on the trail and return. Personally, I like the mix of quiet snow and good conversation with my fellow volunteers. To learn and see more about the Eagle Cap Extreme Sled Dog Race, go to www.eaglecapextreme.com.
Well, thanks, Josh, for giving us an insight into yet one more way that amateur radio operators serve their communities in Ham Nation. Next, we have another how-to video. There are a large number of Windows programs out there in the wild that can prove useful to hams. So what is a Mac user to do? In the shack here, I use a commercial program called Fusion from VMware. They have a commercial competitor named Parallels. Also, Oracle publishes a free emulator named VirtualBox. But there's yet another approach for running individual Windows applications on the Mac. It's called Wine. It's especially suited for DIY fans, and Jeremy, VA3ZTF, shows us how to install it and run an amateur radio application. Let's watch.
Last time I showed you how to get everything ready to install Wine, and now we're actually going to do it, as well as installing a simple Windows program. Run the command brew install Wine, and like last time, it's going to go out and fetch all the required dependencies and install Wine. As you can see, there are quite a few of them, and this took close to an hour for me, but once you see that final beer mug and the command prompt, we're all set. To install our program, we need to navigate to where it is. Mine's in the download folders, so I'll change directory to downloads list, and there's the application package. Change into that directory, and I need to find the .exe file. Simply run wine setup.exe, and from here on out, it's going to run pretty much like a normal Windows program install. I'm installing the cloning software for my ICOM ID51. Once the installer pops up, I'll click Next for English. Next, to install it, choose the program folders, and away it goes. As I said, this is just like installing a normal Windows program. In order to run the program, we have to go into the Notional C/programs folder that Wine has created. This is found in a hidden folder in our home directory, and you can follow the command that's on the screen here just so I don't mess it up. But make sure you get all the slashes in the right direction or else it won't work. Now I see my ICOM folder, so I'm going to drill down into that, and I'm going to search again to find out what programs are under there. There's my cloning software, so I'll change into that directory, and I'm going to give the command winecs51plus.exe, and my Windows program should start up. And there we go. Next time I'll tackle setting up the COM ports, as well as creating a simple Apple script to run the Windows apps using a standard icon. Until next time, this is VA3ZTF.
Well, thanks, Jeremy, for that quick look at Wine running the ICOM app used with the ICOM D-Star Handy Talkie. If you'd like to install Wine on your Mac, check out Jeremy's other videos on YouTube. Just search for VA3ZTF. The first video in his series shows how to install all the prerequisite software on your Mac, and then another shows how to write an extremely simple, almost one-line AppleScript application to launch your Windows applications. Well, let's switch gears now, look at a few photos Bob shared from the Collinsville Winterfest there in Illinois. The photos were provided by Jim in 0JSN. Our first photo features Ron. He's K9 ID. Here he wears one of the ham T-shirts that he creates, and that's a good one. Here's a look at many of the shirts that he's designed and had available for sale there at the Winterfest. We've got a close view now of Jim KF4NBG's booth in Collinsville. Jim has a large selection of beautiful call sign plaques. The ones you see here on Ham Nation behind the hosts are an example. He'll sandblast just about anything that you could want as a ham on your coffee cup or any other object that you'd like to have him sandblast. And here's another shot of some more artwork in Jim's booth. Well, the 3.943 gang was on hand at the Winterfest also. This is a shot of their booth. Jason, KD0EZK, was on hand in Collinsville. He left the proud owner of an ICO 720. Well, during a trip to California, Bob had a chance to visit Wayne, W6IRD. And that's the next slide, I believe, Brian. He got to see Wayne's Collins 20V2 broadcast transmitter in Orange. And back in St. Louis, here's Bob visiting with John Clemens. His call's W0BD, and he's a retired aerospace engineer. It was back in 1962 that John designed the Mosley CM1 receiver. It's one of the rarest vintage receivers you can find out in the wild today. And that's it for Show Me Your Shack Parents Hamfest. Hope you had a great weekend at this past weekend's Winter Field Day. If you did, how about sending us a photo or two or maybe a good video about your operation? Remember, this segment is here to display viewer-submitted videos and shack photos, so please do submit yours. The queue is empty, and we'd love to feature your video. Just send a link to your video on YouTube or any other site where you might have it posted, and your photos, send them also in the email to Ham Nation Videos. That's the address on the screen at twit.tv. We'll get them on the air here on Ham Nation for you. Well, it's time now to venture into George's studio in Jackson, Mississippi. We're going to check out this week's edition of Smoke and Solder as Randy, K7AGE, wraps up one of his latest kit building projects, and he puts it on the air. George, take it away.
Well, I don't know that there's a lot more I can say about that, Dale. I think you just described it. So let's take a look at that. We'll come back, and I got a couple other little things for you.
So I've been busy. I have all the bits mounted on this plastic drawer organizer I got at the dollar store. And just to let everybody know again, this is not the final packaging. I have another idea for that, but I wanted something that I can have everything spread out and have it kind of nailed down so I don't have a bunch of loose things here on the workbench. So the board's on the top with a bunch of holes for the cables to go from these headers down through to the various parts underneath. On the front, I use my own push button for the push to talk. Microphone, display, I cut it with a knife, pretty sloppy. Tuning and volume. And on the back is the power, the BNC for the antenna and external speaker. If I turn it over, you can see those connectors across the back. And on the inside front is, again, the push to talk, the microphone jack, the Arduino DDS board with the display sandwich, tuning, and the volume control. So I printed out the wire-up instructions from their website. On the first page here, looks like a little bit of an addendum for some changes. Second page, it shows kind of the overall wiring. And on the board, it has all these headers that will wire out to the controls and to the Arduino board. And the first step is the antenna connector. So looking at the box here, here's the header for the antenna connector. So my cable needs to come from here down through this hole and out to there. So that's a good 3 inches long. And here's one of the cable assemblies. It has the headers installed. And I've got a bunch of RG174 small diameter coax. So I think I'm going to take out these wires and use coax instead, and just because I can. So the connectors have the wires installed, and there's a little tab on the edge of the connector pin, and if I push that down with a screwdriver, there it goes, I can slide it right on out. And these are crimped, and I don't have any extra, so I'll just cut the wire off. I'm just going to solder my coax on to what's left of the connector. Okay, now I'm going to tin the wires here, make it easier to solder. Okay, so I cut the wire off the pin, and I'm going to tin this. Of course, there's some plastic in there, and it's going to melt. But I think I can just tack this on here. There we go. Now I'll do the shield. Okay, I have my connector block and the vise. I have my pins kind of formed the way they're going to set in there. Run them, push them kind of both in here to start. And I'll take my little screwdriver and push from the back. That went in, and I could feel the tab pop up. And there we go. They're both in. And I'm going to plug on my header, feed it through the hole here, and I'm going to tin the ground lug here and the center pin, and just heat that up, slide that in, hold it, and heat this up, and I'm basically just tacking things on. And there we go. I'm going to continue hooking up controls and such, and I'm not going to show you all the steps. It's just more of the same. Here's a top view of all the wiring in place, all the jumper cables going below. This is what the bottom side looks like with the controls and the display. Here's a few extra wires, and here's some of the other connectors. So, does it play? Well, I tuned into the North American QSO contest, and let's see.
Oh, Mary, thank you. I needed Montana. Good luck. This is K7LBJ. QRZ.
Kilo 7 Alpha Golf Echo.
Kilo 7 Oscar Golf, John in Washington. Are the Kilo 7 go again?
Kilo 7 Alpha Golf Echo. Kilo 7 Alpha Golf Echo.
Kilo 7 Oscar Golf Echo, John in Washington.
Yeah, Kilo 7 America Golf Echo. America Golf Echo. Randy. Randy in Oregon. Randy in Oregon, go ahead.
Kilo 7 Alpha Golf Echo Randy in Oregon, John in Washington.
Very good, thank you very much. Kilo 7 Alpha Golf Echo.
Got a Kilowatt 7 again.
Kilowatt 7 Alpha Golf Echo, Alpha Golf Echo.
Got Kilowatt 7 Alpha Golf Echo. How you doing, Randy?
Very good, I'm talking to you on my BidX 40.
Yeah, outstanding. Yeah, I recognize the call there. Good to hear you. And it's working. You're a little bit down for me. I'm up in Washington. My name is John. Over.
Okay, John. Very good. Randy in Oregon, and running about 4.5 watts here today.
Oh, no wonder 4.5 watts. Outstanding. I thought I heard something you're doing to Washington or something.
running my at my little BitX40, my BitX40.
Yeah, very good. Well, that's pretty good. I'm 4.5 watts. Good to hear you and good to push you to launch tonight, Randy, okay?
Very good. 73, thank you.
73, no way, 7 Mike Zulu.
Kilowatt 9, radio Mike.
Kilo 7, Alpha Golf Echo.
Kilo 7 again.
Kilo 7, Alpha Golf Echo, America Golf Echo.
Okay, Kilo 7, Alpha Golf Echo, Tom in Montana.
QSL Tom, this is Randy, Randy in Oregon, Randy in Oregon. Go ahead.
Oregon, what was the name?
Name is Randy, Randy.
Is that Randy?
Randy.
Okay, got it, Randy. Say.
4.5 watts.
4.5, okay, great.
UNA to UNA, Kilo 9, Charlie Tango.
Kilo 7, Alpha Golf Echo.
Okay, Alpha, the 7, W, is it W7 Alpha Golf Echo?
Kilo 7, Alpha Golf Echo. Kilo 7, Alpha Golf Echo.
Okay, Kilo 7, Alpha Golf Echo. My name is Craig, C-R-A-I-G. I'm in Illinois, in Yolima.
Okay, Craig, Randy in Oregon. Randy in Oregon, go ahead.
Kilo, WN6K.
Kilo 7, Alpha Golf Echo.
Alpha Golf Echo, Paul, California.
Okay, Paul. It's Kilo 7, Alpha Golf Echo, Randy in Oregon, running 4 watts. Randy in Oregon.
Okay, I heard you say 4 watts. What is your name, Randy?
Running 100 watts here, but two elements antenna. Okay, very good. Thanks, Randy. 73.
73.
Well, it does work. How about that? So I made 7 contacts during the North American QSO party running about 4 watts. So having lots of contest stations, they're looking for points, although it's kind of crowded with just a QRP signal. But it does work. I've got some other mods and things I'd like to add to the BitX40, but it's up and running for now. Thanks for watching. Randy, K7AG.
Well, thanks for that, Randy. And it's nice to see you having fun with that. I tell you, the thing I like best about that, I believe, is the fact that it's using an Arduino with it. You know, I really like that little microcontroller. I've got 2 or 3 projects behind me now going with those. They are really a blast to play with. But, you know, we had a HamFest here in Jackson this past weekend, the annual Capital City HamFest, which is one of the nicer HamFests in the South here. It really has a lot of surplus stuff there, a lot of old boat anchors and things. Of course, there's new gear there as well. And I just bought a few small things this year. That's mainly what I went for, although I still have my eye on an ALS 1306 1200-watt solid-state amplifier from Ameritron, and I may get that yet. I just haven't quite pulled the trigger on it. But of the small things I found, this one right here might be my prize find. I am not sure yet because I have not tried this out. This is a big spool, the same size as, you know, you'd buy solder on, a solder wick. And I got this from our friend Richard over at Maine Trading Company. He had a number of rolls of this for $5 a roll. So I just had to have one. If it works, boy, I'll never need to buy solder wick again. That's quite a deal there. Well, you know, last week we didn't have a question. We gave away a clock, but we didn't have a question for something to give away this week. However, this week I do have a question. What we're going to give away is this DX Engineering sport bag. You know, it's so big, I can't hardly show it in the camera here. But, you know, this is a big sport bag, plenty of room, a lot of pockets on it. It's what I use to do field day with. Or you might see me carrying this around a ham fest with a bunch of video gear in it, or clothes, or no telling what. It's a really nice sport bag. Thanks, DX Engineering, for that. And the question we're going to have, this came from the episode of Ham College that Tommy and I shot this past Saturday night. We just released that at hamcollege.tv. And I know Gordo knows the answer to this question, but I hope he won't tell it. And maybe one of you can guess this. Here it is. Which of the following is the most common cause for failure of coaxial cables? A, moisture contamination. B, gamma rays. C, the velocity factor exceeds 1.0. Or D, overloading. Which is the most common cause of failure of coaxial cables? The most common cause. If you think to know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win that DX Engineering Sport Bag. And we'll be back with more in just a moment, but first, a message from ICOM.
2017 is here. Let ICOM keep the new year momentum rolling with an array of radios to help you communicate and listen all year long, no matter where the year may take you. Base stations, mobile transceivers, handhelds, and more, ICOM has all the equipment to make 2017 the best year yet. Communicate with the touch of your fingertips, perfect for small spaces. The IC7100 is the ideal D-Star option to help you communicate anywhere throughout the year. Angled control head and touchscreen for quick, intuitive operation. Large internal speaker for clear digital audio, and it's perfect for multiband and all-mode communications. Planning to be on the move this year? Back for a limited time, the IC7200 is a great option for hams wanting a rugged device to carry out into the field. Simple and tough with IFDSP, digital noise reduction, and USB port for PC control. Ideal for the ham on the go, the IC7300 is the new radio everyone's talking about. It's a high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design, RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, SD memory card, and more. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win. After each episode of Ham Nation, go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And as a matter of fact, for January and also for February, that radio is going to be the ICOM ID51A+2. Dual band, dual watch, VHF, UHF, handheld transceiver with both analog and D-Star, built-in GPS receiver, DV and FM repeater list function, independent AM/FM receiver, free Android app, and a lot more. So January, we've got a winner now, and it is Antonio KE0GXN. Congratulations, Antonio. You're the winner. And for February, well, we're going to have another one for this ID51A+2. Send your answer to us, or actually send your answer. And there's really no answer. You just go fill out a form at icomamerica.com/hamnation. Tell them what you like about Ham Nation while you're there. And you could be next week's winner of a T-shirt or hat. Plus, you'll be automatically entered into the monthly drawing for a grand prize. And now I believe it's time to see what's going on in the chat room with Amanda. Amanda, how are you and Jeff tonight?
Hey, George, I'm doing good tonight. Thank you for the contest. And good luck, everyone, with that question. I have an announcement to make. I know the answer to that question because this last weekend, we just did a technician course overstudy. Basically, we got everyone in the room and went through all 400 questions, and I now know the answer to that. So with that being said, I'd like to congratulate 6 new technicians that got licensed on Sunday here
wow.
in Canyon City. I'm really proud of them. Jeff and I, actually, Jeff did a lot of the work. He hustled and bustled and went through all those questions on Saturday all day long. And some people said, you know, I'm not quite ready yet to take the test. We said, no pressure. Come back next time. Take the test. And the 6 people came in and 6 people passed. So good job, you guys. All right. That being said, let's go over some questions. Bob, the first one is for you. KA9USG Lee says, will a modern linear amplifier work with AM on a modern radio? If so, what ones would you recommend?
Absolutely. You have to be careful because AM is a steady carrier, and most amplifiers are made for single sideband, RCW, where they're just on a little bit of the time. So when AM, that amplifier is on the whole time. So you have to be careful that you don't blow it up, and you can do it real easy. But in this, I take in case the 3001 that I use, I have four of them. I use them on all the AM gear. It's just a great little amp. It basically is an 800-watt, 1,000-watt amplifier, and I don't use it more than – I get maybe 200 watts out of it. Now, I have to also think on AM that your power is four times that. You're looking at the peak envelope power of that carrier. On sideband, of course, you have to have a meter that will measure the power as you do that. And there's a lot of power meters that will do it. On AM, you got to be careful. So you run no more than about 200 to 300 watts of carrier, because that's going to give you 1,000 to 1,200 watts of peak envelope power. So that's how it works. But I have to pad down the little ICO, because the ICO puts out 60 watts. If I put 60 watts into that 3001 or in my 922 or any of these amps behind me, I'll end up running about who knows how much carrier, and it would blow it up. The power supply would fail. So you just have to be careful and run no more than about 200 watts of power of carrier, and you're going to be just fine. That's what you got to do on AM.
Very good, Bob. Thank you so much. And Gordo, we have a couple of battery and solar questions from what you were doing this weekend. So let's start with the first one. KB3ZCZ, Dalen would like to know, how many watts were you making and storing with your solar battery setup to run the 9100 at Quartz Fest?
We were using the 40 amp hour battery from BioEno, and it ran for 2 days with no watts of solar power charging. So 2 days at the 40 amp hour BioEno battery, and the ICOM 9100, the one you see here, Amanda, that's caked with dirt and moisture, did not miss a beat on the BioEno 40 amp hour battery.
Okay. And so a tag along question with that, you already answered the what size battery. What charge controller and panel were you using as well?
BioEno has a new one. They came out with an original one that you could barely see in the daylight. So they have a new one that is an LCD display. It doesn't have a model number. They're just bringing it online. So anyone contacting BioEnoPower.com, just ask them for the new Gordo, much more readable battery regulator. And it does great, because what it does, it's a PWM type. And it just slowly folds back the charging current from the solar panels so that the battery does not get much above 14.6 to 14.8. And that's a neat thing, Amanda, about the BioEno batteries. They run about a volt higher than what you would get on a conventional lead-acid battery. And that makes the ICOM 9100 and other 12-volt radios very happy.
Well, very good, Gordo. And my personal question is, you have all of these people out there at Quartz Fest doing these kind of battery solar setups. Do you have a safety officer that kind of goes around and checks out and makes sure everyone's kind of doing it up to snuff, that kind of thing?
We do. We had several antenna walkabouts, solar walkabouts, safety walkabouts, just to see how all of these systems are going. And let me tell you, this is the year of the new battery technology, lithium iron phosphate, and certainly the year for great solar panels, which also BioEno Power comes up with. And we were amazed that small foldable solar panels could do as much as 6 amps on a panel that you can lift up and easily put in the back of the trunk of your vehicle.
Well, very good. And one final question was, how many watts were the panels that you're using?
I don't know how many watts were rated on the back of the panel because I always look at the ammeter. And the ammeter said 6 amps when the batteries were slightly discharged, and then it folded back to about 2 or 3 amps when they became up about 14.6. So rather than watts, which is sort of a game that they play with voltage output unconnected, I go by how much current is that panel stuffing into the battery, and I make sure that I use the solar controller that BioEno Power has that holds back that current so as not to cause the battery to go much over 14.4 to 14.6 volts, which it just loves to stay in that range.
Okay, very good, Gordo. We appreciate it very much. Couple more announcements here to make, you guys. We have not forgotten that pretty soon our 300th episode is coming up. So be sure to tune in and find out some interesting info about what we have planned and maybe some on-air functions as well. We're in the works, you guys. Nets tonight, we have the DMR TAC 311 net going on probably right now, and also D-Star 14 Charlie going on right now. Echo Link, do drop in, you guys. Drop in there and see what's going on. And for HF, we've got the 40-meter 7192. I can't wait until springtime when we can get 20 meters back on the air as well. So with that, Bob, that's what I've got for questions in the chat room tonight. I'll send it back to you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Keep in mind that we are being transmitted on WTWW. That baby is really something. I'm seeing emails from Europe and South America, and just it's amazing where your voices are being heard tonight, gang. And the audio on that thing is amazing. I've been having fun on Saturday nights, if you guys don't know it. Why, 8 o'clock Central on Saturday nights, I do a half-hour theater organ concert, and it's just so much fun. Get to hear all these, read all of these wonderful emails. Even got a couple of letters from people. So Ted Randall and his gang down in Nashville are keeping it going for us, and we're very excited about all that. So I just want to get back on here. The Collins Collectors Association, the first Wednesday of each month, have this great thing going. They started on the East Coast, and each time as the time changes, why it moves to a different location. It starts out at 7 o'clock on the East Coast, and then 7 o'clock Midwest, 7 o'clock Mountain, and now it's starting up on the West Coast. And it's really fun to get on and work them if you can, through each one of them. I checked in earlier. And you might want to check it sometime. Go to your Google and put collinsradio.org, and they'll have some information about all of that. That's a great organization. Even if you don't collect Collins gear, it's a lot of history. Well, we've had fun tonight, and I'm glad Randy got his transmitter working. That's cool. And Quartz Fest was fun, and golly, it was good to see K9 ID at Collinsville. We had a good time there. So what can I tell you? Nice stuff tonight, Dale. You look great, and we'll be back here in a couple of weeks. I won't be here next week. Gordo, you're with me down in Orlando, right? We're not going to be here, is that right?
I am with you in Orlando, so neither you nor I will be on the show next week, but we'll be thinking about you, and knowing Bob, he's probably got the magic phone that will beam us hello from Orlando Hamcation this next weekend. Not this one, next weekend and weekend.
Yeah, and I just so the chat room will know, Sarah and Steve and Jerry, all my crew, they're going to be there. So there will be people watching us.
And Bob, we tuned in Ted Randall's show and you out there at Quartz Fest because there was no local FM, no local AM radio other than Skywave, but the signal on 5 megs was overwhelming to the desert.
Usually it's about 40 over 9 here. Well, we will see you back in a couple of weeks, and I'm sure everything will be cooking here next week. So Don and George, all you guys keep it going. And, of course, Amanda will keep a watch on you. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Tell all of your friends and all of your neighbors to tune in, and let's get with the great hobby of ham radio. It's getting better every day. Every day there's more things coming. So we'll see you right back here next week. Brian, thank you. Leo Laporte, thank you for the wonderful opportunity here on Twit TV. For now, we'll talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
Radio got neutered, you guys. This is sad.
But it looks like the reception is pretty good.
The reception is
great. Oh, radio.